This is Minnie Brussel, and it's part two of World Watch's program number 805. I just wanted to clarify, because I went too quickly through the relationship of Donna Rice to Adnan Khashoggi and Frank Sinatra. She said that she became linked romantically with Prince Albert, the son of Princess Grace and Prince Rainier, in July of 1981. Of course, Ronald Reagan was inaugurated in January of 81, and 6 months later, she was in the company of Prince Albert and met him. And she quoted the fact that they are dating up a storm, they're deeply in love, and this may be National Enquirer, but she was close to Albert, the son of Grace Kelly. Donna's mother said that she had met the Prince Albert, through Frank Sinatra's son, Frank Sinatra Jr. Incidentally, Frank Sinatra Jr. was used as a diversionary in the same tactics at the time of the John Kennedy assassination, around that time period where they literally pretended that he was kidnapped. And it was a news diversionary. I'll have to look up the dates for you on that. But it was Frank Sinatra who introduced Judith Exner to John Kennedy, and he fell for that bait. And Judith Exner was associated with Sam Giancana, the mafia boss, and with John Rosselli. And she would leave the White House and then go down to Florida, the same Miami, Florida, to meet with the mobsters whom Robert Mayhew had hired to set up a team for assassination purposes. At the time that she was with Prince Albert, she met Adnan Khashoggi's daughter at the same time in a restaurant in New York. The daughter invited her to attend a birthday party on the yacht. She went to Monte Carlo and went to Khashoggi's yacht. As I say, Khashoggi involved this same person with General Secord, Albert Hakim, the late Cyrus Hashemi, with Elliot Abrams, with the whole Reagan clique inside the National Security Council, and with Casey, with his client, Mr. Furmark, and Khashoggi's lawyer, Mr. Evans, was arrested with Paul Cutter, Paul Seixola, a member of GINSA, the institute in Israel, combined with our Defense Department. She went over to Monaco and was on the yacht in the Mediterranean in 1981 or 1982, and Khashoggi spent a lot of money. There were beautiful women there, and he gave her some money to travel around Europe and get clothes, and said, go buy whatever you want. You need new clothes? I have an account. And she said it was like a dream. Now, it's the same country, Saudi Arabia, that Mr. Khashoggi comes from, that Ronald Reagan wanted a favor from in 1984, that Robert McFarlane has been testifying, that country is to give $1 million a month to the Contras when Congress says they can't have the money. Saudi Arabia helps them out. And Mr. Khashoggi and Saudi Arabia are very useful to the policies of this hidden government described as that parallel CIA, but it's a parallel NSC. And so Khashoggi is very close to the late William Casey, to General Secord. He spent a lot of time in Saudi Arabia. He and Oliver North to get the AWACS for Saudi Arabia against a lot of the voices in Congress. They got a medal for it from the president for arming Saudi Arabia. And Khashoggi is introduced to Donna Rice through his daughter, by way of Prince Albert, the yacht of Khashoggi, just as the late Aristotle Onassis was always set in Monaco. That's the harbor of the deposed monarchy and the arms merchants of the world. So once Frank Sinatra introduced her to Prince Albert, and Sinatra was always close to Grace Kelly, then she can meet Khashoggi. And, of course, I imagine there's even more interesting pictures of her on that ship. Now, to get on to another subject. As I said, last week, the Senate hearings commenced, and they took testimony from Major General Secord. He talked about specific laws that were broken, although he said he didn't think anything was wrong about it. And the president was aware of what he was doing. And it was very dramatic testimony for anybody who has seen it. It's hard to visualize it when you get segments on the news. Now, 1 week later, just today, May the 11th, the long-awaited trial of Klaus Barbie takes place in Lyon, France. And again, the synchronicity of Secord and Barbie and Ronald Reagan's White House team and Barbie. The literal investigation of the President of the United States is going to go on with 50 or more witnesses until August. And over in Paris, the investigation of Klaus Barbie, the Nazi Gestapo chief in Lyon, France. He was brought there from Bolivia February the 3rd, 1983. Now, what does the Gestapo chief of Lyon, France in 1943 to 45 have to do with the President of the United States in 1987? And those of you who've listened to World Watchers for a long, long time know that I've talked about the relationship of Klaus Barbie to George Bush, to the Reagan administration, to the drug traffic. They have a lot in common. And just, again, synchronicity today, Robert McFarlane is the person testifying before the Iran-Contra Committee. He was the National Security Advisor under Ronald Reagan. Then he, in quotes, retired so he could do the schlepping for the president to send the arms to Iran and then divert the money to the Contras. He stepped down and Robert McFarlane came in. And he testified under oath his relationship as a protege at the National Security Council under Henry Kissinger and under Alexander Haig, and how he got his position. He also was one of the first Marines to land in Vietnam and worked with William Colby, Shackley, Klein, Secord. You begin to get those names. They all worked as a team in Laos, Saigon, Iran, then transferred over to Iran, and in Central America. So this week we now have the hearings of the President of the United States continuing the investigation of his participation in these acts, bypassing Congress, the State Department, the committees that were set up for foreign policy, and the trial of Klaus Barbie goes on in France. Now, for quite a few years, going back to, I just remember broadcast in 1983, one of them was broadcast number 608, and I charted out the relationship of Henry Kissinger to Fritz Kramer, Nazi Fritz Kramer, and their work after the war with the likes of Klaus Barbie. And also Henry Kissinger was instrumental in the Iranian coup in 1953 that killed Mossadegh and put the Shah of Iran on into power, and the drug dealing connections of the Nazi Pahlavi family that could get rid of Mossadegh not only for oil but for narcotics traffic, and the relationship of Alan Dulles of the OSS to Klaus Barbie, and then the OSS became the CIA, and Henry Kissinger's constant contact and the State Department's contact with Barbie. He was discovered in France. He was supposed to be caught as a war criminal. The United States kept him under their wing. He was given a passport by the United States government and the Vatican and the Red Cross. All three of them helped him. In 1971, when Nixon was president, Barbie was on the way to becoming one of the cocaine kings of South America. In 82, Klaus Barbie was allegedly sending cocaine to the likes of John DeLorean, which has never been proven or unproven, but was told to me by a man who flew with the pilot who had the cocaine, who was with DeLorean, William Hetrick. And William Rogers, of course, was Secretary of State under Nixon. He was close to Iran and the Pahlavi family. And Nixon and Kissinger and Barbie and the Iranian connections, the drug connections, and the cast of characters of the political people are all very much involved in that not-so-secret government. If you want to study it, there's a lot of books out of it. But Barbie was under the wings of Henry Kissinger when World War II was over. 1945, 46, and 47, Henry Kissinger was in the 970th CIC, U.S. Army Intelligence, in charge of Barbie. John J. McCloy from Chase Manhattan Bank put Kissinger into Harvard with Alan Dulles. And also then, this is in 1983, this is 4 years ago, August 83, I was doing a broadcast on the connections of these people, Kissinger and Barbie, to Otto von Bolschwing. In fact, if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope, if you don't have this tape, tell me you want the sheets from broadcast 608 and 610. I'll show you what I had on the air. This was 4 years ago in 1983 that ties in with Otto von Bolschwing and his TCI. I was talking about TCI, and that becomes the Stanford technology that Hakim took over. Otto's TCI was involved with Ronald Reagan through his secretary, Helena von Damm. Helene married Christian von Damm and kept that name even when she was ambassador to Vienna. And he was stationed in La Paz, Bolivia, representing the Bank of America. Christian von Damm is now in Miami. It'd be interesting. He works for the Bank of America in Miami. And, of course, nobody has yet thought to check out what he's doing there or hardly knows about him. I also had in that same broadcast in 1983, and this is very important because what these people are testifying about now was detailed and marked down 4 years ago for you listeners to World Watchers. I referred to Mark Rich and Henry Kissinger and their attorney, Simon Rifkin, the attorney for TCI and for Chris Kraft and for Sterling Bank, and that's very important. And it is Simon Rifkin's law partner, Arthur Lyman, who is the chief counsel doing the questioning for the Iran-Contra affair, he and one other attorney, Mr. Nields. So Simon Rifkin's law partner currently in 1987 is supposedly interrogating or questioning, and he's very mild. Of course, this first day in Robert McFarlane, he was harder on C-Corp, and I referred to Simon Rifkin. I didn't know his law partner at that time, or his name was in the list of law offices, but it didn't ring a bell. He just became prominent to this case when he came into it. But in 1983 on the chart, I have Barbie, thanks to Henry Kissinger, and U.S. Army intelligence and Vatican routes and CIA aliases and a guide, helped become partner with cocaine king Mr. Gomez in Bolivia. And all this he did and got in return for wiping out resistance people in Europe after the war, for breaking the labor unions, and then going to Central America and breaking those people who would want to check the imbalance of what we have with their poverty, what William Colby referred to as the native populations increasing and eventually resenting the imbalance between what we have and what they have. Along come organizers to help them. And, of course, the role of the death squads of Barbie and his friends was to kill those people who stood in the way of the profits of particular organizations, or what is known as the overview of the Galen organization. In August 83, I charted out the relationship of Alan Dulles and the OSS with Carl Wolf and Reinhard Galen, Hitler's chief of intelligence, and how our intelligence system was formed and our use of Klaus Barbie through Henry Kissinger and other top officials that represent the banking interests. And I also referred to Barbie's fiancés of death in Bolivia and Stefano Della Calle's role with them. In Spain, it was the Guerrillas of Christ. These men were responsible for the Bologna bombing. And many of you are seeing articles in Nation magazine and even Wall Street Journal and a lot of more standard publications. The trial is going on now of Della Calle and Francesco Pazienza. And in 1983, August 83, I was talking about those connections, and they linked directly to the Iran-Contra affair. Also, I referred to, after World War II, the World Anti-Communist League was set up, and how these offices of World Anti-Communist League merged with the American Nazis, the Minutemen, Carl Weidenbach from the Philippines, who was Charles Willoughby, and John Singlaub, the man whose name is so far on the fifth day hasn't been mentioned with the hearings. Singlaub is the man who hires the mercenaries and distributes through the organizations the funds that go into the banks of Mr. Zucker in Switzerland. And I also was referring 4 years ago to Credit Suisse, which is in fact the bank that Mr. Zucker uses to fund the Iranian money for weapons would go through him, the money down to Central America for the Contras, and the money, the $500,000 or $600,000 that goes to the account of Stanford Technology of Hakim and Secord. I was talking about Credit Suisse in 1983. Rather than go into the details of what Secord said for 4 days, and I'll do a lot of it later, I want you to know that by 83, that I had detailed these characters, their banks, their connections, and the synchronicity of the trial of Barbie starting the same day that McFarlane, the Kissinger protege, is on the stands is very interesting to me, because the organizations that they work through have been existing for a long time. The newspaper, The Guardian, had an article May the 6th, just this last week, "Fascist Trials May Expose International Network. Stefano Della Calle is implicated in many deadly plots." And this is an article about that same character who worked with Barbie and Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer, and he's on trial, of course, in Italy with Francesco Pazienza, regarding the Bologna bombing and also regarding death squads and drug operations in Latin America. And, of course, it's those Latin American connections that go directly to Mr. Gomez-Rodriguez. And, of course, this past week it became very clear in Richard Secord's testimony that Gomez-Rodriguez was, in quotes, recruited by Oliver North, but he worked with George Bush and the Bolivian drug smuggling death squads when Bush was CIA director, when Air Cuba was blown up, when Orlando Letelier was murdered. This organization in our White House and the CIA worked and helped form the DINA, the police of Augusto Pinochet when Allende was murdered, Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins being down there, and Task Force 157 played a part in that murder when Bush was CIA director. Now, this article on Delacay goes into the various murders, and it makes a point that I've had for a long, long time that eventually we'll have to get into the establishment press with these trials and so forth. And it tells how the intelligence community covered up who really did the bombings, because their intention was to blame all crimes on the left. The intelligence forces, after the bombing at Bologna, they immediately arrested 150 anarchists. They murdered one of them. They protected the right-wing terrorists, the fabrication of evidence. They implicated the left and so forth, and they collaborated with the right wing. This is the police, the intelligence, and, of course, this article about Stefano Delacay goes into the P2. That's Licio Gelli, who attended Reagan's inauguration. And I bring this to you now because I've done many broadcasts on him, but it's just in the news, and it's May the 6th. And then it continues, this trial, more than any other investigation of right-wing terrorism, threatens to expose the ties between the Italian state agencies and terrorists. Prosecutors in the Bologna case claim that the agents of Italian intelligence not only created diversions to help Delacay escape, but they were involved in the planning of the bombings. Now, as these hearings come out, more and more it becomes obvious to me, and I felt it right away, but have to collect material for 3 or 4 years, that the TWA hijacking was arranged by this administration, that the murders in Turkey the night before Reagan has to start campaigning for this last senatorial campaign, the murders in the synagogue, the hijacking in Lebanon, the Achille Lauro, were orchestrated by Michael Ledeen and Oliver North as activists, because they were doing exactly what Ledeen did with Henry Kissinger and Francesco Pazienza, which was creating terrorism, the strategy of tension that Delacay liked so that the right wing would get the votes. And this article continues that along with Delacay is another person, is a defendant in this bombing, Francesco Pazienza, a wheeler dealer, a member of the CISMA, that secret intelligence group I've talked about in the P2, and Pazienza was sent from New York to Italy for trial. He's also a major player in the Vatican banking scandal and was once an associate of the Reagan administration's anti-terrorist propaganda, Michael Ledeen. Ledeen, the man who set up Robert McFarlane and the Saudi Arabian connections, Mr. Khashoggi, and the Israeli connections, Ledeen was the kingpin in the Italian intelligence in setting up the right-wing murders to make them look like left-wing. And these trials are taking place in Europe just as our hearings are going on here. But the connections of Barbie to these violences and Barbie to Ledeen is lost in a lot of the news. This article says the trial of Stefano Delacay is likely to reveal a lot about the international fascist groups in Latin America. And when you get to the fascist groups in Latin America, you're just a little way from Central America and the White House. It says Delacay settled in Latin America in 1975 after the death of Francisco Franco, first in Argentina, where he set up the 3A, then in Bolivia. He helped fuse the escaped German Nazis that came there into a new generation of fascists, and he brought some from Italy, Greece, and Rhodesia. He trained them there. Traveling to Chile after the overthrow of Allende, thanks to Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins, home from Colby's Phoenix program in Southeast Asia, thanks to Salvador Allende's murder, Delacay formed the Pinochet death squads and went into an international assassination squad specializing in the murder of left-wing exiles around the world. Delacay's organization became the prototype for death squads all over U.S. client states. Delacay's most important role in Latin America was his role in 1980 in the military cocaine coup in Bolivia. And for the next 2 years, Klaus Barbie and Delacay and a motley collection of old and new fascists called The Fiancés of Death terrorized Bolivia. Bolivia's military, government, and cocaine kings centralized their drug industry. Bolivia and Delacalle developed contacts with the CIA and other operatives there. Delacalle went to Venezuela in 1984 after the overthrow of Bolivia, and rumors linked him to, of course, to Paciencia, who was in the United States, and then Delacalle was arrested. And one time he was in Miami, and I've had this on broadcast before. It says a journalist found out that he passed through Miami Airport September 82 in the company of Abdullah Kotli, a leader of the Turkish fascist Grey Wolves, one of the central figures of the Bulgarian Connection. U.S. mainstream coverage, this article goes on to say, is very silent about the expose of the P2, the Bologna trial. The suppression is to protect NATO. NATO commander was Alexander Haig, who wants to be president, protege of Fritz Kramer, and so forth. So Michael Ledeen comes into this, and Barbie's connections, and Licio Gelli, to this administration and to the last convention down in Dallas, where you know, the deposed persons from Bolivia, Mr. Mesa and so forth, were Richard Allen. And the stories in other newspapers now going simultaneously with these hearings will tell you as much about the people on the stand as you need to know for a while. I wish more would come out, but there's a lot to read. The New York Times had a story this week, attitudes change on opening UN war crimes, and maybe you should start writing to various people in various countries. At first, 16 of 17 members of the United Nations said the war crimes shouldn't be open. Only Australia said to open them, and now there more countries are saying they're more willing, and so maybe there'll be progress on that. And the reason I mention that, with all the Iran-Contra stories going on, is because the Nazi war criminals who were protected and hid all these years, will you find, if they ever open this up and it hasn't been sanitized, had a much bigger effect on General Secord and Albert Hakim and the organization TCI and Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins and their whole General John Singlaub has worked with these known war Nazi war criminals in the World Anti-Communist League, and the network of people is very cohesive from World War I to World War II. And, of course, it's getting a little better view. We get a better view of the way it operates inside the White House. Now, two weeks ago, I did a program on Peregrine Company in Dallas. It was operating from 1981 to 84, run by Gary Howard and Ronald Tucker. And these men referred to Major Meadows, Richard Meadows from Vietnam, again, another part of this team that I've been talking about this evening. And now Meadows became the president of Peregrine, and then met frequently with Lieutenant General Samuel Wilson from the former Defense Intelligence Agency, who's a special advisor to Caspar Weinberger. And this is a team that hired what they called the guns, people to kill. That's the name for people who had no qualms about killing people and blowing them away. And their idea was to work down particularly terror cells in Honduras, and they had a foothold strong in Honduras. Well, the article I cited and outlined in great length was from the San Jose Mercury. And then I take the Miami Herald, and the fun of taking all these papers, if you have the time to read them, is that sometimes the same article by the same person has things left out of it. And can you read every paper? No, but this one does. So out of the Miami Herald, the article written by Frank Grieve and Matthew Purdy, and it's a whole page, it isn't just, a column, has almost the same paragraphs. I check paragraph by paragraph and then use colored pen on paper to see what's left out. And what I found out was that this operation that was working from 1981 to 84 was talking about a proposal, a Peruvian proposal, and somebody wrote the sky's the limit. Then it said other documents confirmed, and they would elaborate on Peregrine's relationship with this General Wilson, who worked in the Defense Department, worked with Caspar Weinberger, and with retired Major General John Singlaub, Meadows' former commander in Vietnam and an active conservative fundraiser and provisioner for Nicaragua's U.S.-backed Contra rebels. Now, when Contra-Iran affair came down, I did several broadcasts at length on the overview of this entire operation, what to look for, and I spent a great deal of trouble showing the tentacles of John Singlaub to the Knights of Malta, to the World Anti-Communist League, to Moon's Causa, being on the board of Western Goals, and how he could tap all these already set up organizations to run their own private government, which is what they do, their own State Department government, and so forth. So it was interesting that the Miami Herald had the name Singlaub out, the connecting pin, because I knew these people were part of this not only illegal Contra operation, but the assassination team and death squads from all over the world who hire what they call the guns, who have no qualms about blowing people away. And then all of a sudden, in the one article, I found Singlaub's name. I didn't need it, but I knew it was there. There was another interesting article, long one, in the Washington Post, April 21st, last week. Contra banking network predates the fall of Somoza. Now, the hearings today, Robert McFarlane is telling about Saudi Arabia coming in and putting money down $1 million a month for a time period until our Congress stops sending money. Congress approves of money going to the freedom fighters that Reagan calls it. And this article, I'm not going to do a great deal on it. I'm due more next week. But the bank in Miami, they use the BAC, the point of deposits, was one used by Somoza when he was alive and by Saudi Arabia. And they had a pass-through arrangement with Wells Fargo in Miami, whereby wealthy Nicaraguans could cash checks at the BAC and safeguard the secrecy of their Cayman Island money. The Contra network used the Banco de America Central in Miami pass-through that went to Panamanian shell companies and Cayman Islands. And it went through a conduit of Wells Fargo. I'll do more on that later, but I just bring it up now. It's a very important article to show that when Somoza was ready to leave the country, he took about $28 million out of the country by way of this bank in the Cayman Islands that would be ready if he needed it in Miami, and that the banking techniques that these people are using were not set up by Oliver North, this colonel in the National Security Council. All they have to do is give him a name and a key, and he knows where to go, and that this network existed for a long, long time. I just want to bring up one subject very quickly, or two, before in the remaining time. Pat Robertson, who's running for president, said last week, one of his speeches and campaign promises, speaking to the Republican members of the North Carolina legislature, that three deaths would improve the court, that three chief justices would be better off dead. Thurgood Marshall, William Brennan, John Paul Stevens. They should either be retired or dead. This is a minister telling you that these men should die. And the same week that he says that, the Wall Street Journal has a long article about J. Peter Grace, one of the original mentors of the Christian broadcasting, a roommate at Yale, Robertson, and the Wall Street Journal goes into the organization known as AmeriCares that funds down in Latin America, Central America, with the brother of George Bush, and an organization set up by the Knights of Malta for purposes down there in Central America. But funding is going through the likes of J. Peter Grace, who brought Otto Ambrose from IG Farb into this country, the man who made the Zyklon B gas that exterminated over 6 million people, maybe 8 million, but 6 million Jews. At Auschwitz, Grace brought him to this country and has worked in South and Central America with the likes of these death squads. And his pastor friend Robertson is saying that three justices should be dead. It is totally disgusting. And then finally, along the lines that he should be dead, you might have read this week that the two men were arrested in Oklahoma, charged with a plot to kill Daniel Ortega. The indictment said one of the men contacted the offices of Representative Philip Crane for information about traveling with arms to Honduras, which borders Nicaragua, and want names of contacts there. Of course, the men are locked up. They were ordered $5 million to kill Daniel Ortega. Here's Pat Robertson of Christian Broadcasting saying it's okay that three justices be dead. Here's Peregrine working with John Singlaub and these same people, hiring people to kill. And these two happen to be picked up and mention Philip Crane. Now, Philip Crane is on the board of Western Goals. He works with John Singlaub on Western Goals. He works with Mr. Carl Spitz Channel, who's chairman of Western Goals. He took over Western Goals when Larry McDonald died. And so when they say meet Congressman Philip Crane of Illinois, he's part of an organization that has death squads, that does go out and kill, that speaks about killing, that speaks about hired guns. And how much more do you need to realize that when they mention these people, they are in fact mentioning real people? As a matter of fact, Life magazine, well, I don't have time to run into it now, I'll do more next week. It has an article about Oliver North's father being in World War II and being very close to General George Patton. Well, George Patton's son is on the board of Western Gulls with John Singlau, with Carl Spitz Channel, with Oliver North, with the funding that has been doing death squads in Guatemala, Nicaragua, and El Salvador. And so the death squads do, in fact, exist and can be linked to these people. And when two people are picked up for an assassination attempt, of course, they're locked up in silence, and Philip Crane is in question. But remember that George Patton III and Philip Crane are on the board of Western Gulls. I ran through this very quickly because there isn't much in 1 hour to cover some of these very important names and put them alongside the testimony that's taking place now. But maybe I'll slow down and do 2 stories instead of 10, but we'll see how it goes. This is Mae Brussel, and my time is up. Keep watching the hearings or reading the papers, and I'll be back with you next week.